In the past year alone, more than half of all children have been exposed to at least one traumatic event in their lives. Those children are carrying the burden of that experience, and it's critical we work to understand the effects it has in their daily life every day after. Welcome to Parenting Today. I'm Sonia Quiñones, Executive Director at SCAN of Northern Virginia, and my guest today is Mary Beth Testa, a child advocacy expert who works with Voices for Virginia's Children. Today, we'll discuss what trauma-informed care means and how parents and community members can learn more and support this approach in our day-to-day interactions with one another. Thank you for joining us. So before we talk about trauma-informed care, let's start with the basics. What do we mean when we say trauma?
These experiences can vary drastically and present themselves in many different ways, but toxic stress typically refers to instances of frequent, prolonged adversity. This is what you and the team at SCAN see and try to heal and prevent every day. Sometimes these traumas are referred to as ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, ACEs. A Kaiser Health study looked at and identified 10 things that could be ACEs. Five of them are personal: physical abuse, sexual abuse, physical neglect, and emotional neglect. And five of them are related to other family members. What else is going on in the world of that child? A parent who's an alcoholic, a mother who is a victim of domestic violence, a family member in jail, a family member diagnosed with mental illness, or the disappearance of a parent, whether it's through divorce or death or abandonment.
And how common is this?
It's more common than a lot of us might think. A new report out by the organization Child Trends cites research indicating that almost half of children in the United States, about 35 million kids, have experienced one or more types of trauma. And young children are especially at high risk for this.
And your organization, Voices for Virginia's Children, advocates for policies that support children's well-being, particularly looking at research and policies that prevent poverty or at least mitigate its effects. So what's the relationship between poverty and trauma?
When children are economically disadvantaged, their families are struggling. They're unable to meet basic needs. We're talking about food, housing, childcare. Children that live in economically disadvantaged households are more likely to experience stressors, and we have persistent childhood poverty in this country. Mothers are worried. They're worried about housing. They're worried about how to put food on the table. They're worried about the safety of their children, and they're worried about sustaining their own health as well. Economically disadvantaged kids are more likely to experience trauma. Lack of access to stability, to nutrition. Some researchers also call those a trauma. We know from brain science that trauma and toxic stress have a similar impact on the brain.
And I think you're kind of describing a double-edged sword to poverty, because kids in poverty may be at greater risk to experience one of these traumatic events, but they're also, their parents may be dealing with so many things that they may not be able to respond and support the child in being resilient in the face of that and learning how to manage stress as well either. So it's almost a double whammy for some of these
kids.
That's
exactly the concern, yes.
So what are the effects of having experienced trauma during childhood?
So we look to the ACEs Connection Network for a really easy to understand explanation of this. Brain science shows that, they say, in the absence of protective factors, toxic stress damages children's developing brains, literally damages the brain. Stress is the body's normal response to a challenging event or an environment. And there's a good kind of stress, the kind that helps us to learn how to be grown-ups and help to have grown-up relationships, a big test day or a big sporting event challenge or any kind of new challenge in your life that you can surmount and you can do it. We learn from those experiences. But when the events or the environment is threatening or harmful, that is not the good kind of stress. And that is not just the any old day, let's get through it kind of event. Abuse and neglect, a parent's mental health crisis, violence in the home, incarceration, it's a very different thing entirely. ACEs, these adverse childhood experiences, can harm the developing brain so profoundly that it shows up decades later.
And you talked about persistence, I think was a word that you used. And so sometimes when the body responds to fear, it makes you sharper. It makes you focus more. And so there's a good innate reason why we do that. But for some of these kids where that sort of cortisol is running through their system nonstop, it's not meant to be that way. And so if you can't turn it on and off, then it makes kids look hyperactive, perhaps, or less able to focus. I wonder if you can talk a little bit more of how it kind of shows up sometimes for kids throughout their life.
Sure. So one of the things we know is that children who experience multiple ACEs in their childhood are 4 times more likely as an adult to have a health issue. They are more likely to continue to experience violence in their relationships or in their homes as well.
Mm-hmm. So it plays out sort of in the educational arena. It plays out in their family and maybe social relationships, and it can play out in the workforce.
That's right.
As well, in terms of sick days and how they interact with coworkers, how they maybe interact with adversity and challenges and those kinds of things. So we're talking about a lifelong set of circumstances, aren't we? So we started this conversation talking about trauma-informed care. So now that we understand what trauma is and how it can affect our community's children, what do we mean by trauma-informed care?
So recognizing that children and adults are experiencing trauma, many of our child-serving systems, literally the schools, the agencies, the places where adults are interacting with children, are starting to become trauma-informed, and they're putting measures into place to strengthen resilience. What does that mean? What it means is that teachers, police officers, court officers, caseworkers or benefit workers, those adults interacting with children or with other adults, can all be trained on trauma and become trauma-informed. Trauma-informed care is kind of like the lens you use in your interaction. It's the difference between tell me what happened to you and, well, what did you do?
Or why did you do it?
Exactly.
As opposed to understanding what might be behind the way the child is reacting to something.
Exactly.
If you're just joining us, this is Parenting Today. I'm Sonia Quiñones from SCAN of Northern Virginia, along with Mary Beth Testa from Voices for Virginia's Children. And we're talking about trauma-informed care and how it might be a new approach to supporting children and families in our community. So let's get a little bit more specific about what this looks like. If an organization like a school or a mental health agency takes a trauma-informed care approach to serving children, what does that mean? What does it look like?
We have, across the state of Virginia, trauma-informed care networks popping up all over. I can tell you a little bit about the one in Fairfax County, for instance. They started a trauma-informed care network a couple of years ago. It began in the juvenile courts and the domestic relations courts. They started reviewing their practices, reviewing their processes to make them more trauma-informed. They've also worked with the Fairfax County Public Schools. They've reviewed physical spaces associated with the courts, interview rooms and meeting rooms, the waiting areas, even the parking lots and lighting and safety measures to ensure they're trauma-informed. If the visitors to these offices have just experienced a trauma, can she or he get through these doors unhindered? Can she get to the services or legal processes? And are those processes ready for the victim? That's what it means. When a child arrives at school having just experienced a trauma, or is in a family where this stress is ongoing, these traumas are ongoing, and it's not just going to go away, that child's teachers, the principals, and the staff all need to know what to do to support that child and as a student.
And you started with juvenile justice, and I think it'd probably be good for our listeners to maybe comment on why that's the case. The truth is, a lot of our juvenile offenders who get in trouble, when you start to unravel, peel back the onion layers, I guess, you find out that many of those kids have had some traumatic experiences, and just trying to restrict and control the current behavior is not nearly as effective as trying to understand how we got there and help the child address some of those issues.
It's all about being willing to take a moment or longer, if it takes longer. Where was that child before this moment? What is that child going through that I don't see in this moment? What brought this child to my door? and being willing to take all of that into consideration as we figure out what support that child and family needs.
Mm-hmm. And where do parents fit in? Is it important for parents to understand trauma?
It is so important for parents to understand the nurturing and supportive role that they play before a child experiences trauma. Parents are the key to buffering the impact of trauma, and their early childhood setting, whether it's a childcare program or a Head Start program or preschool, these settings also play a crucial role. Parenting is tough, and there are families who have tough moments or tough days, but because there are resources and a support network, we motor through. That's not what we're talking about. Families that are experiencing toxic stress all the time is a very different situation than let's just get through it. They need that help. We need to ensure that parents can get medical and mental health care, and addiction support and recovery is critical to ensuring parents are on a strong footing. But we also need to consider the impact of poverty on toxic stress. We consider the availability of childcare for working parents, transportation, housing, food, and jobs and wages.
And this is really about breaking that cycle that we often talk about, right? It's about intervening now to be able to sort of change the course of the future, both for this child as they become an adult, but also for their children.
And there's those moment-to-moment intervenings in our relationships, but there's policy implications, too, and things we can all do as advocates, as we do at Voices for Virginia's Children.
That's great. I want to make sure that our listeners know that SCAN and some of our community partners in the Trauma-Informed Care Network that you mentioned are doing some screenings around the community of a film called Resilience. I think it's The Biology of Stress and the Science of Hope that was put together to really look at adverse childhood experiences and how trauma-informed care approach to community services, particularly in healthcare and in the schools, can make a dramatic difference. So I want our listeners to visit scanva.org and look for some of the dates of when those screenings are happening in their community. And I also, because you mentioned the policy implications, wanted you to share the website for Voices as well if folks are interested in looking at some of the systemic and policy issues.
Please do visit us online at www.vakids.org.
Great. Is there a final message you want to leave with our listeners in this final minute?
We have a lot to do, but a lot of great teamwork happening, and also in a bipartisan way. We are anticipating that we'll have to protect many of the programs that benefit kids at the federal level: healthcare, home visiting, childcare, early intervention, and support for foster care and juvenile justice. Action in the states matters enormously as well, and city councils and county boards can play a role in prioritizing families. Our priorities are that support for families and supporting child well-being. We're watching closely and advocating around some troubling policy proposals. But at Voices, we are bipartisan, and we talk to everyone. And we will also stand up and point out when poor children aren't getting a fair shake and when our systems and programs have racial disparities. We cannot give up on these families.
Thank you for being a voice for our children.
Thank you.
Every child reacts differently to traumatic experiences, but every child's trauma deserves to be seen and understood in ways that will help us support that child as he or she moves forward. Trauma-informed care is a powerful perspective that gives all of us, whether parents, teachers, service providers, or community members, a compassionate but powerful way to respond to a child's trauma and set that child up for success. This has been Parenting Today. I'm Sonia Quiñones from SCAN of Northern Virginia, and I want to thank iHeartMedia and Mary Beth Testa from Voices for Virginia's Children for joining me to talk about this important topic. Remember, parenting can be tough, but asking for help doesn't have to be. For more information about trauma-informed care, as well as other parenting topics, visit the SCAN website at scanva.org.